Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
You're the cellophane. Is that good?
This is a good fucking cookie.
It's a vegan cookie, and I'm not a vegan, but it's a vegan cookie.
I like vegan cookies.
I like vegan cookies.
These are
from
a company called Alternative Baking Company, and they.
It's another reason I don't. No, I'm not gonna.
You're gonna what?
I was gonna talk about somebody. Badly.
Not good while we're being recorded.
Nah.
So, Chris, you have an actual girlfriend?
Yeah, she's in the other room, you guys. She probably won't come out.
She's always in the other room.
She probably won't come out because, you know. Yeah, I have a girlfriend and we have a lot of sex,
You get all her pussy.
Yeah, I get every pussy that a girl would have. Mm-hmm. I get all of them.
When she grows the pussy.
Yep, that's right. You know, when the man takes that part that,
The pee part, right?
Yeah, where he pees in her. When the man pees in a woman.
The pee hole.
Yep, right in the pee hole.
And then he pees thick pee.
It's thick pee. Pee out of it, and then 9 weeks later, a baby comes out.
Hopefully yours.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
I think so.
Yeah, that's how it works. We're munching cookies.
Nothing worse than eating on a podcast. The sound of it.
Oh, I would have said cancer.
Yeah, there's some things that are worse.
Anything that are worse?
Yeah. Name one.
Fucking on a podcast?
No.
Fucking on a podcast.
How does that work?
If we were fucking on this podcast?
Fucking a pile of cancer on the podcast would
like
be way worse.
Like
yeah, fucking a tumor.
Like a vaginous
sound
tumor.
A little like this.
Hey, have you ever fucked a tumor?
Actually, no.
That's delicious. No, it's quite nice.
What point do you taste it?
Sometimes I'll just cut it like I'll be at the morgue or whatever and just like cut a hole in...
or whatever.
Like a dead guy's thigh and just...
Not as
close your eyes.
Matthew worked at a funeral home.
Did you?
And
really?
You played a guy who worked at. This is crazy.
Will you embalm me?
Would I?
Yeah. Will you?
Yes.
We promise here and now to embalm me when I die.
I just want to get to know the person who's going to embalm you.
I feel like it's better if you don't.
I feel like doing a podcast with someone is a great way to know them. Get to know them.
This is how you really get to know people.
Yeah.
But you fight alongside them in war, or you do a podcast. But it's really just those two ways.
Mm-hmm.
Rainn Wilson, I first met you in the year 1999, I think, maybe, or 2000.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
remembering 2000.
I think it was 2000.
Okay.
We were doing a movie called House of a Thousand Corpses, and Rob Zombie put us in a weird room to audition together.
That's right.
With the two girls, Aaron Daniels and Jen Johnston.
That's right.
And I think he ended up putting that footage on the DVD.
Did he really?
I think that footage of us pretending that we're being attacked by the Scarecrow.
And like miming, driving the car.
Yeah, and
like
at the end you go, Rain, we get attacked and we're screaming like, oh my God, Bill! And then you just go, and I'm dead. And you just fell to the ground. You actually said the words, and I'm dead.
Can we put that... Let's put that on the podcast. You can do that, right?
Yeah, yeah. You can take anything and put it anywhere. There's no licensing issues.
No one makes money off this thing.
No. Movies don't make money either, so it doesn't matter. As we pointed out in last week's podcast, where Back to the Future still hasn't made its money back.
That's true.
And Harry Potter lost money.
That wasn't our podcast, though. That was a...
No, that's the creative studio accounting
kind of thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, we're still in the red.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really? That's one of the highest grossing films of all time. Well, we had one of the highest budgets of all time, which was about $1 billion.
They built that town.
We spent $1 trillion on marketing. Literally a trillion.
I was about to sing "We Built This City," and then I thought, well, you guys will never... You're going to have to pay for the rights for that song.
No, I think you can. I think you can. You know, if you change...
We built this city!
On what? What'd you build it on?
We built this city on podcasts!
Yes, now see, that falls into parody law because you made fun of the song.
There we go.
So that's all right. That's totally all right.
Yeah, Chris, we had a good time on that movie.
I did have a great time.
It was one of the highlights of my professional career.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
was that your first big? That was your first kind of movie, right?
Yeah, I mean, I had been in some small parts in movies, but that was my first like quote unquote lead part. Mm-hmm. I don't know that you'd call Bill Hudley a lead part in House of a Thousand Corpses.
James Lipton. Rain, I'd like to talk to Bill Hudley right now. May I talk to Bill?
Look, I'm just going on a road trip with my crazy friends, just checking out all the haunted areas along the road.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bill Hudley.
Oh my God!
Room.
Oh wow! You just took over.
It was so good, I couldn't tell the difference.
You just took over. I was possessed.
Rain, what is your favorite swear word?
Cum nuggets.
I just want someone to say something weird. On that show. Is that show even still on?
Yeah.
They're still doing Inside the Actors.
Does he still do it? He's run out of actors, right?
He did all of them.
Billy Joel. I saw that.
Oh yeah, that's an older one.
I'm gonna sneeze.
Gesundheit. Bless you.
It's a sneeze cast, and you know what? I just sneezed some cookie.
Let me get you some
Kleenex. No, I'm gonna wash my hands off.
Okay.
Keep going with the wild
rain. Rain built this city on sneezing snacks.
I enjoyed the Billy Joel one.
I think sneezing snacks would be a great idea. If you could put some sort of a powder in your nose and then you sneeze a snack into your hand.
Wow.
It'd be sort of like...
like it comes out. Like a
Exactly. That comes out like a gummy worm. It's just like a jello powder and then you sneeze and your body fluid activates the jelly powder.
I had a dream the other night that I sneezed out of my nose a lemon.
That's a problem.
It hurt really bad, and I woke up and had the worst headache of my life.
Maybe it was a tumor. Should we fuck it?
You should probably get a CAT scan.
No, you should seriously go to a doctor about that because your body
right
is
now.
Telling you something.
Maybe right now
it'll blow over.
Jonah, no, I can't open those. One eyeball is drifting to the other extreme.
That's what I call my Biggie Smalls style of eyeballs now.
Okay.
I just want them to kind of drift off to the side.
Well, it's working.
Yeah, I'm going to start just like leaning back every time I talk to.
Jonah, half your face looks like it's melting off your skeleton. Mm-hmm, is that normal?
Yeah. It's I'm really not into symmetry anymore.
Do you smell toast?
All the time.
What's the clear viscous fluid coming out of your left ear?
Oh, party sauce.
Sneezing snacks.
It'll be fine.
So we had a good time working on House of a Thousand Corpses, and then you, at the time, by the way, do people still say Fish Boy?
Jokes?
Are you
all
still?
The time.
Still.
All the time. I love it that, you know, there's about, I get stopped obviously for The Office all the time. People, oh my God, you're in The Office. But there's still like 5% of the people out there. They'll see me and they're like, oh, you're the guy. And I'm like, yeah, The Office. And they're like, Fish Boy!
I still get Dr. Satan. I still get Dr. Satan.
Dr. Satan! Dr. Satan!
I still get it, yeah. Yep.
That was in the trailer for that movie.
It was.
Yeah.
Yep.
That was great. That was such a good time. That was a good time. You've done other Rob Zombie.
I did a little thing in Halloween 2, but I just played a... I just played like
just
a talk show host. Like I didn't get horribly brutally slaughtered. Yeah. Which I'm kind of. I think every actor should do a horror movie once.
Yeah, you start doing them more than once, then they.
Then you're Tony Todd or something.
But not only that, but and Tony Todd. What a great reference! He's Candyman.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite horror actors.
But he's. But anyway, I spent like 5 hours in makeup getting appliances done for when my chest gets ripped open. And I step out of the trailer and they're like, we're not going to get to you today. And so I had to go back in. It was another hour and a half.
Oh, that's brutal.
I know, but I remember, and I had a horrible panic attack. We talked about this before. I had a horrible panic attack when they tried to model my face.
I had that same thing happen.
You did?
Yeah, I've had a panic attack when they put... Did they put the putty over your
face?
They
put the putty over my face, and as soon as they covered my ears and my eyes, and there was just a little straw sticking out of my nose, I had a meltdown.
Did you tear it off your face?
I tore it off my face.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. I did the same thing. I had it... They put it on my face for another thing that I did, and they pour this this thick goop all over your face, because they're, and then it hardens... And then they make a cast out of your face.
It's like that dental imprint stuff, right?
Like it's very much like that. And they're like, it's okay. I'm right here. I'm keeping your nose passages clear. I'm going to keep your nose passages clear. I'm right here. And they didn't do the straws. They just literally, like, they did fingers. Oh, they were just, like, keeping... And then they poured it on. It just went right into my nose.
Oh, shit.
I was like, where's the nose passages clear part of the equation? So my entire ears... Nose, eyes, mouth was completely covered in goop. Oh. And I was like, and I was tearing at it.
Yeah, I did the same thing.
And now I can't do it again.
Yeah, no,
I'm done. I'm gone.
Because you know how horrible it's going to get.
Yeah.
I heard Shia LaBeouf complaining about that once, and he was bitching.
When they go to put it on his face, he goes, no.
And he was like, I used the one from Indiana Jones. I'm not sitting again. That's what he said.
I don't think I could even handle just the nose passages though, because I have allergies and my nose would just start plugging up.
You'd sneeze a lemon.
Yeah, exactly, right? It wouldn't come out because everything would be hardened.
Now, do we know for a fact, is Shia LaBeouf related to Sabrina LaBeouf from, who played, she on the Cosby Show?
Yeah.
She played the oldest Cosby sister, right?
Yeah.
Sandra?
Yeah, I think she played Sandra. Yeah.
And Elvin.
They're not related?
I don't believe so.
All right. I just feel like LaBeouf is an uncommon name. I'm going to stick to this. I'm going to prove it sooner or later. If I have to abandon everything else that's going on in my life to just prove that thing.
That's where the downward fall of Chris Hardwick started.
You could easily prove or disprove that with like a phone call.
Hey, Nerd America, if you could see this, the microphone that they're using to record this... podcast is pretty high tech, but it's sitting on top of an issue of Martha Stewart Living.
Well, Rain, that's because
bright ideas for fall, tempting tricks and tempting treats for the happiest Halloween ever.
Don't you want tempting tricks for the happiest Halloween ever?
I should get up and leave right now. How dare
you? Well, if you do, you're gonna miss candy bar desserts and grown up grilled cheese.
Why do you have Martha Stewart Living in your house?
Because
she's not really here.
It's a court order. After the whole thing with the stock market
thing.
And
this is not an old one. This is October 2010.
Oh, this is an
the future.
This is...
Oh, my God!
It hasn't happened yet!
You guys, I know what's going to happen on Halloween now!
Wait a minute. I just blew your nerd cred.
Well, I do have a girlfriend, and this proves it. Now I'm going to have to hit her when you guys leave. She would kick me through the wall.
Nerds don't hit their girlfriends. They stab them in World of Warcraft.
No, she knows how to kickbox. Janet knows how to kickbox.
So you only know how to box. So.
Yeah, exactly. So her legs have a much farther reach than.
So you got two more appendages on you that she can use.
Yeah. I would get put away immediately. But really though, I mean, Martha Stewart is living, and that's why you're here, Rain. I want to talk to you.
If Martha Stewart was dying, would you embalm her, Matt?
Sure. I would love to. I'm only an assistant.
I think Martha Stewart should have a magazine, Martha Stewart Dying.
That would be awesome. That's what they should have made the Halloween episode.
Wait, we still have time.
Oh my God, this hasn't happened yet. October 2010 hasn't happened yet, you guys.
My son is 5 years old, and it scares him when I make the scary laugh.
Really?
Yeah. And he says, don't laugh. And he doesn't like, when I laugh at all, he recoils because my scary laugh, like, freaks him out. You want to hear it?
Yes.
Rain, stop it, Rain! Rain, stop it! That was really scary. He literally gets scared at it.
Do you have two children or one?
I have one. He's a boy. He's almost six. His name's Walter.
Yeah, I know Walter. I remember when he was a baby, you and Holiday. I remember when that happened. That's how long
you delivered the baby.
Yes, I did. That's right.
Everyone remembers when.
As Walter, Dr. Satan.
As Dr. Satan. Well, because he had all the tools
sure.
to cut people
sure,
open.
Yeah.
And it seemed appropriate.
Yeah.
And when your wife, after she went into labor for 5 hours, I came out and I was like, we're not going to get to you today. And then we made her come back the next day. When we were shooting Corpses, you were talking about a sketch group or a show that you were working on. I think it was called Nubozina. Did you ever do that?
Yeah, you know, the Nubozina was this really weird sketch comedy performance art clown show that we did in New York. I did with a bunch of friends, and we did an off-Broadway play, and that's what brought us out to Los Angeles, was we did the play in L.A.,
mm-hmm.
And from the we got a deal at Fox, and I got a manager, and we tried to turn it into a TV show. We turned it into a really bad pilot at Fox, which is in a vault somewhere, which was basically they tried to turn it into, like, ALF.
What?
Wow. Yeah.
A sketch show? Like an off-art?
Yeah, well, it was like these weird clown characters, and we tried to base the show off these weird clown characters, but they tried to make it like the weird clowns move into a normal family.
Hey, do you think maybe...
That's already good. That's
already good. You're there.
Hey, do you think maybe these clowns could have an appetite for cats? No, that was... They did that on genuine, Al. Please.
That was a genuine laugh. It's like, oh, that's great. That's
great. It was very genuine.
More laughter.
It was not ironic.
They were trying.
That worked at Fox.
Well,
yeah.
So that's what you did? You shot a pilot?
We did a pilot, and that was a long time ago. And then we did a short film about 5 or 6 years ago that I directed that I just have never been quite happy with. And so we keep tinkering with it. Believe it or not, I'm still editing it.
I shot it
about 5 or 6 years ago.
Holy shit. We did
a version, but now I'm doing a different, shorter version. And pretty soon we'll put that out there on the interwebs. And people can enjoy it. And we're thinking about, the film right now is about 18 minutes long, but I think I'm going to cut it down to about like 11, do like the 11 or 12 minute version.
Yeah.
We're thinking about doing the show again, because it's such a great, the theater piece itself is a great, fucked up, wonderful piece of theater.
What are those actors all doing? Are they still?
They're all performing. They all live in New York. One of them's a blue man. And the other two of them, and the other two of them, he was actually the fifth Blue Man. There were three Blue Men, and then there was the fourth, the sub Blue Man. He was number five. Now there's like 87 Blue Men,
yeah,
all over the world.
How did they, I mean, I know there was the great Blue Man subplot on Arrested Development, yeah. But how do they audition Blue Men? Like, how do you audition for a Blue Man?
Armisen was a Blue Man.
He was?
Yeah.
Fred Armisen was a Blue Man?
He was like drummers.
He was a drummer at Blue Man, but I don't think he was an actual Blue Man.
Do they make you like pick up a pipe and look puzzled by it? Like, those guys always just puzzled, like, whoa,
this is a pipe. I have the craziest, this is the best. If you ever get Jason Sudeikis on this podcast, he has the funniest Blue Man story. And to me, this story is what life is all about, because Jason Sudeikis wanted more than anything else in the world to be a Blue Man. He was convinced. And this is no joke. I mean, he'll talk about it. He talks about it almost with tears in his eyes.
Like, it's not ironically.
No. He wanted to be a Blue Man. He wanted to be on cutting edge performance art, theater, and music. He loved the spectacle of it. He was doing Second City in Las Vegas, and every year he would audition for the Blue Men, every year he would get rejected. And he was mostly rejected for his drumming, because you have to actually be a really good drummer. You have to be an actor drummer.
Right.
And he was taking drum lessons and this and that, and like, he just was not naturally a very good drummer. But he would... He would come back, and they'd be every year. He'd be like, "Hi, Jason, hi, I'm back again." And it's like, and then he kept not getting it, and he was really like hitting his head against the wall. Like, what, God, what do you want from me, world? What am I supposed to do? I just want to be a Blue Man. How can I not get in here? And then he was like, "Oh, Second City's calling you back to the main stage in Chicago. Oh, they're hiring writers for Saturday Night Live," and he got on as writer, and now he's. Dating January Jones. So do you think that he'd be dating January Jones if he had become a Blue Man?
He would have been happy.
Nice.
Yes, I feel like fate brings people together. She would have been in Vegas at a show, and like, I can't believe this agent is making me go see the Blue Man.
She would have been doing Avenue Q with the puppets down the street. And
they would have... He would have bumped into her and just like, "Sorry about the blue paint I got on you," and then they would have fallen in love.
But I love that story, because you never know which way the world is going to take you.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's also an inspiring story, because I feel like most people who start performing in Vegas, like, they stay in Vegas.
Yeah,
you know, because I think Vegas is probably
much like their activities.
Yes, yeah. It's like everything's yes, exactly. The work that happens.
If you perform in Vegas, it stays in Vegas.
Here's a great Vegas story I just read. My editor at Wired sent me this link on the new hotel they built in the city center. They built it's just it has this curved body and it's all glass.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it gets sexier.
So it's like half as big.
There's an area that if you're sitting by the pool, it focuses the sun on you like a death ray. And so people were sitting there and then all of a sudden like they would start to smell burning hair and realize that they were being singed and like plastic was melting because it's like 20 degrees hotter.
Oh, oh man, and so that's fantastic.
And so they have to figure out how to go in and fix it so that...
boom, problem solved. Solar panels. Provide enough electricity for the entire hotel. Boom, problem
done,
solved.
Done, exactly. Done.
Isn't that what happened with the Luxor? You know, originally was that golden glass like mirror color before it was black, and it was affecting the flights coming in to Las Vegas.
Oh, really?
At certain times of the day, it would just reflect back, and they couldn't see anything.
It would blind.
Yeah, that was all. That was that weird succession of horrible plane crashes just outside Las Vegas.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like a month.
I called it Langoliers. That's what I thought it was. I thought it wasn't. Sounded nice. Like Rice Krispies.
There was that, and then the god Amenhotep laid waste until they repainted the.
Ra was very upset.
Very upset. You make this hotel black. Gold is my color. So then from Corpses, which was a lot of fun and took, I don't know, a few years to actually come out. But then you did pop up on 6 Feet Under, which I watched. And you were great on the show. And it was just sort of like, I remember having a conversation with Rob about it. Because Rob was like, have you seen Rain on 6 Feet Under? And I was like, yeah, I just saw the first episode. He was like, holy shit. And, you know, we were both...
I don't think Rob really thought I could act. He just thought I was like an adorable dork to stick in his movie. And saw it in half. So.
I don't know. The only reason I got the part in House of a Thousand Corpses is because I was friends with Rob. And it was that, like,
clearly.
Yeah. Well, I am Irv. And so I was privy to the casting process, and he was like, mm-hmm. and there's this guy came and he's really funny, and he's got these glasses, and he looks kind of 70s, and he's really hilarious, and it worked out really well.
It worked out good for all of us.
Now, when you were auditioning for The Office, were they like, Rain, can you pretend you're being attacked by a scarecrow?
They did. Creature? They did, actually. Yeah.
We're gonna put you in this fish makeup.
Mm-hmm,
fish makeup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like fish would wear.
Yeah, and Steve Carell dressed up like Otis.
Yeah,
and we and Jenna Fisher dressed up like Baby.
Hey,
and we just did a little reenactment.
That's fantastic.
Greg Daniels was a huge fan of the movie. So.
That'd be great if every job had their like someone was like, "Would you do the fish boy thing?" Like, come on, when is that gonna? That was really just like 5 hours of you sitting in one place, right?
Yeah, I just sat in a table with a hole in it and just pretended to be sawed in half. It was pretty awesome.
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Did you...
these guys are like, I didn't see the movie.
Yeah. I saw it. I liked it. Because I liked Sam Haig a lot.
Sid Haig.
I'm trying to remember the dude that was in it, that was also in Devil's Rejects, that was from Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2.
Oh, Leatherface?
No.
You're talking about Bill.
Is that Bill Mosley?
Yeah. Chop Chop.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was Chop Chop.
Yeah, big fan of his.
Yeah, he's
so
great.
So much that I can remember his name. Whatever I want.
I'm a fan of people. I don't fucking remember names. I'd love to talk about your sort. Like, what scares me the most about this business is just the concept of like, oh, ever just being an actor, because you feel like you're so at the mercy of a business that because people get jobs for a lot of reasons, and it's not always, you know,
sure,
not always the most talented person gets the job, and I'm sure you. We're up for many things before you kind of hit.
A new actor on The Office got cast because of the stunts he did on YouTube.
Nice.
Yeah. This guy, Mark, I can't even pronounce his last name. He did these amazing YouTube videos called Kenny Strasser, K-Strauss, the Yo-Yo Master.
Office. And he was crashing all those new shows.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was pretending to be... if you guys are listening to this podcast, you got to go just Google... Yo-Yo Master, Kenny Strasser, and he was going on local news shows pretending to be a really depressed yo-yo master, but he didn't actually know anything about yo-yos or how to use them, and he just pulls the leg of whatever local newscaster is there.
He's still done it for a while, too. He talks about how he goes, and he does motivational speaking at schools with yo-yos.
But it really is, it's well done to the point where you... if you didn't know, you'd kind of be like, oh my God, I think that guy just had a meltdown on the news.
He does it really sad. He always talks about how his father died last year and he's going through a lot of depression and stuff like that.
That's so good. That's so great. You didn't think that stuff could still be like that good after, you know, Borat and after something. Yeah. Everyone kind of just did it the best. And then this guy just is perfect at it. It's so good that something came out of that.
But you're right, Chris, because you're an actor in L.A. and you've got your head shot and you're waiting for the phone to ring. And that's a terrible way to do it.
I would, if I didn't have stand-up comedy and a career that I made up in podcasting, a career in podcast. I don't think you really have a career in podcasting.
You and Stephen Tobolowsky.
Yeah, exactly. You just turn on a recording device. But I feel like I would probably go crazy. So how do you kind of navigate those emotional waters when you're out here and acting is like your main thing?
Well. Yeah, I mean, I'm the same as you. Like, I saw right away, like, you know what? I am going to put a gun in my mouth if I just sit around waiting for the phone to ring to get an audition for CSI Miami.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to kind of do things myself. So I started writing scripts and directing little things and just, you know, creating my own stuff. So that's what kind of keeps me, you know, that's what really feeds me.
Yeah.
You know? And it's great. And then, you know, and then the office worked out and now, you know, I've been producing some things and writing some things and it's really cool.
Are you going to do that thing that a lot of really funny comedy actors do when they get much older and like 20 years ago, like, I don't want to be known for comedy anymore. Is it going to be the Chevy Chase thing where like in 20 years, if people are still like, Dwight, and you're like, don't fucking call me that. Like, you're gonna flip out.
I'm totally gonna do that. But I do have a thing about people calling me Dwight. It just fucking pisses me off. Dwight, yo, Dwight. It's like, my name isn't fucking Dwight. It's a character that I play. You know what I mean?
That documentary you do.
Yeah.
What's it like to work at that paper company?
Well, you know, an airplane pilot doesn't walk through the concourse and you don't go like, yo, flight, yo, Alaska 5730. Yo, Alaska 5730.
There's actually footage of Matt LeBlanc freaking out just the other week about being called Joey.
No kidding.
Paparazzi guy called him Joey. And he just berated the dude.
Was it?
He didn't get violent or, you know, punchy. He saw, that was a long time ago and I don't do that anymore.
Was it
please.
For, no. Was it for the show he's doing?
That is a possibility.
Because he's doing a show where he plays himself.
Really? Oh, maybe that
he's
was,
doing a show on.
Maybe you just got pumped.
I just got Joey.
You got Joey. But don't call me that. He's doing a show. He's doing a show where he plays himself. I saw a commercial for it. I can't remember what it's called. But
episodes. Yes, I saw that. Yeah.
Episodes. And he's sitting in the thing, and he's like, "What if Brian?" He's talking about Ross and Rachel. It's really weird. I mean, I hope it's a funny show. But but people still yell Jenny McCarthy at me. Like, I'll be like,
that was 15 years ago.
Jenny McCarthy!
He doesn't even look like her. So
no, not anymore. Not since I lost those tits.
At least yell Carmen Electra.
No. Or, you know, it started to shift to Olivia Munn because of G4, which I feel like, you know, like, if you can survive a couple of different girl hosts that people try to associate you with, then that means you've been doing it for a long time. And so I sort of took that as a milestone. Like, I didn't just...
I saw you years ago when I was on MTV Beach House Tiki God.
Yes.
You didn't turn around though.
I didn't.
No.
I love that Tiki God. I made him do the outgoing message on my voice machine.
Really?
Yeah. That guy's name was Andy... he worked for The Tonight Show years later. Anyway. Do you feel like, do you feel like it would have been easier or harder? I feel like it probably would have been harder like 20 years ago when there wasn't as much media crossover and there's no internet and there's no, you really are just kind of like, well, you're either an actor or you're a host or you're a theater actor and then that's it.
Yeah, it would have been way harder. There's way more opportunities for actors to do stuff now. You know, when I go around and talk to young actors, like, no, but occasionally, you know, I'll speak someplace and people will be like, I'm an actor, what should I do? And it's like, you just have to take charge of your own career. Mm-hmm. That's what you have to do. And just, you know, I wish I had something more profound to say.
That's all I have to say too. When people are like, I want to do stand up. How do I do it? Yeah. Like, well, you get up in front of people and you tell jokes.
Writing jokes.
Yeah, it's just better to just, like, do as much as you can on your own. Because it's never about, like, one thing getting to another. It's just about being ready for that random time someone says, hey, can you do this? And you're like, yeah, I've been doing it this whole time on my own. Now I'm going to be able to do it for you.
I guess it's hard because some people don't really know how to be proactive as an actor, and I think that's why people kind of get caught up in acting class loop, because it's like, where it's like, at least with stand-up, I can go do shows,
yeah.
But it's not like, well, I'm going to go put up a scene at the coffee house. I mean, you can, but then people...
How much you get paid for doing a stand-up gig?
It's a lot more now than it was a few years ago.
The average,
it's not bad.
I just wanted to savor the discomfort in the air. I asked.
You know what's really funny about
asking about the money.
Here's what's really funny about talking about. Here's what's funny about talking about money. You can talk about money in extremes, and it's socially acceptable. Like you can say, "Yeah, make minimum wage," or you can say, "Brad Pitt got $20 million for a movie." But when you get into that mid range where you're talking like anywhere
10,000 here and 5,000
anywhere up to a few hundred thousand dollars or $1 million, like it's weird to talk about it for some reason. I don't know why that is.
I when I was younger and a lot more naive, I used to go around saying how much I made in a year and be like, "Why can't people?" I would go up to people, "How much do you make in a year? How much did you make last year?" Like I would use that as an icebreaker, and people would look at me. I was so principled, I would be like, "You can't fucking, why can't we fucking talk about that?"
That might be an ice creator. I don't know if
it did that a little bit now when I asked you how much you made for the stand-up.
I was like,
You found a worse question than, "So what do you do?"
So you tell jokes or whatever?
Well, I mean, the average road comic, maybe you don't know them, but the average road comic is like, what, 60 grand a year, maybe?
Well, it depends on how many shows. Low end...
You can make a lot.
Well, no, but I'm just talking about the average
probably still makes more than that.
No.
Low end, more entry level headliners will probably get like 1,500 or 2 grand for a weekend.
Yeah,
you know, for a week.
Yeah,
and so Tuesday or Wednesday through Saturday or Sunday, and then guys, and then when people
and Jim Gaffigan, he makes 200 grand in a weekend.
I mean,
in a day,
on a Saturday.
I don't know what his
guy
exact numbers
shits
are.
But he makes 200 grand.
Yeah, he shits. He literally shits money. I don't think he's okay.
That's what his character does on My Boys.
Yeah. That's what I'm also fascinated by the idea that that you started Soul Pancake,
mm-hmm.
which I found not only content. It's I always use it as a model for, like, you know, it's like when we're talking...
What not to do.
No, exactly what to do. Because we're sort of experimenting with a social network off the Nerdist site. And I literally said to the people when we were kind of putting together, like, you need to look at Soul Pancake. It's perfect because it's interesting subject matter and it gets people talking and asking questions and interacting. And but the site design is gorgeous. Like the art, the rotating images in the background are incredible.
Yeah. I got to turn you on to that guy, Mike Mitchell.
That's Mike Mitchell.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Not the Mike Mitchell who directs Shrek 4. There's another Mike Mitchell. But
I always get those two mixed
Mike
up.
Mitchell. Yes, it's true. It happens. But thank you for saying that. Yeah, it's been it was just a passion project of mine of like once I got well known, I wanted to do something like on the internet that was really positive. I didn't want to just do a comedy site and I wanted to create something on the web that I would have really liked when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Like something when I was 17 years old and I was like dealing with life's big questions, because I was a nerd on so many different levels, but I was also a nerd that like read about Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I was like in philosophy, mm-hmm. and I was going to be a philosophy major and I was really struggling with life's big questions and dealing with them, and I wanted to have philosophy kind of come alive and be more relevant. So that's why I started at Soul Pancake was, you know, there's no place on the web for young people especially to kind of like dig into what it is to be human. If you've got questions or problems, some girl today just posted, because we have a thing called the Question Collective where you mm-hmm. can post your own life's big questions. And so people, users, are constantly posing. It's like Yahoo Answers only for, you know, philosophy. And this girl was like posting about dealing with depression, you know, and then all these people were answering her. And then she had this forum for, you know, really digging in deep to, you know, to what it was to be depressed and to process the feelings that she had. And I think that's pretty cool. But it's anytime you deal with something that has to do with spirituality and philosophy, it's pretty much a money losing proposition.
but also like that. But did you see the video on the internet of the chimp who fucks the frog in the mouth? Because that the internet has that too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what I was going to say. Does the negativity that is rampant on the internet ever like flow into?
We had a couple of trolls, but now and then we put in a flagging feature, and then they've just been gone. It's been really
the community
positive.
Pretty much protects themselves.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's been really positive. Like the people are, we have atheists and born again Christians. And Mormons and people from all over the world.
No Jews.
No Jews allowed. That's on the heading.
Are you over 18? It's one of those.
It's not Sol Latkes.
Jews, blacks, and dogs not allowed.
No dogs allowed.
It was such an interesting use of a website that, you know, that seemed very, very thoughtful on your part of something that was really interesting to do. And I always, I look at it and I've been the guy who your content manager, I can't remember his name.
Who, Devin?
No, there's another guy.
Manager?
Devin. He's like a content manager. He was an editor. He was editing. He reposted some stuff from my website to yours, and I thought it was awesome because my site was relatively new, and it was just sort of dumb and geeky. And then you have this really altruistic site. That's really. I was a philosophy major, by the way.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
All right.
It would have made you leave school if you were a philosophy major.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Did you leave school?
I did. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Because you start questioning the value of everything, and then all of a sudden you're like, well, why am I in class? Yeah. And how can you grade me for the ideas that I came up with?
So the answer to last big question is just leave?
Yep, every time. Give up. That's what my dad taught me when we went out for cigarettes.
Walk away.
Yeah. It's all a crock of shit. It's all a bunch of crap.
So is Sol Pancake, I feel like that's a thing you could turn into a show or...
Well, that's what we're trying to do. We got Sol Pancake. We're doing some webisodes for the Popra. we're for Oprah.com and OWN, and we're hoping to turn that into a TV show. But it's really interesting stuff. We're going to do some on the street stuff and kind of some guerrilla spiritual, artistic, creative challenge endeavors for the web. We have a book coming out November 2nd, Sol Pancake the Book, which is like, you know that book, The Artist's Way?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where you write and it gives you challenges to do and it engages you. It's kind of like that. It's kind of a workbook that you can carry around that has really cool, beautiful art in it and ways of engaging with the reader. And
where do you send it to get graded?
Fucking UCLA Dodd Hall Philosophy Department.
That Chris Hardwick's going to grade them.
I'm going to grade every book.
It's just going to be a pile of books, and you just got your red pen. You need another red pen.
Smiley face.
Yeah, it's like when Olivia Munn said she would sign if you sent in her Playboy issue. Oh, yeah. She would sign it, and G4 was just like instantly. It was like that episode of The Simpsons where they all write the letter to Itchy and Scratchy, and Marge gets them censored. It was just like mail trucks, and then just boxes of fucking Playboys.
Oh man,
that they had to deal with. Yeah, that may not. I may not get that kind of traffic, but if someone sends me their Sol Pancake
for your Playboy spread,
yeah, for my Playboy spread.
God damn it! One of these days, you guys. One of these days, and everything's gonna be gravy.
But do you feel that? I assume you're a pretty spiritual guy.
Hey. Yeah, I mean, I have a spiritual practice. Sure, it's important to me. But the thing that's most important to me than that is the fact that, one of the reasons we started Sol Pancake was literally this conversation I had with Ed Helms. And I quote this in the beginning of the book where, you know, we had just launched an early version of the site. And Ed Helms was like, so what is this Sol Pancake business? And I was like, well, it's a site that's seeking to explore creativity and spirituality. And he said, well, those two things are kind of mutually exclusive, aren't they?
Interesting.
And I kind of thought about it, and I was like, wow, this is now my mission, because I really believe that, you know, we live in such a compartmentalized society. You know, we have our work, we have our spiritual beliefs or not, our friendships, our creative life, our hobbies, you know, our family, like they're all of these different boxes. And this is only in the modern world. Like throughout human history, all of these things have been woven together, whereas spirituality, social life, how you are in the world, what you create, it's all part of your identity of what it is to be a human being. Mm-hmm. So I'm more about that. I'm more about the fact that I'm a spiritual being, but when I play Dwight, that's a spiritual act.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm entertaining, I'm being of service to people, and I want to be the same person everywhere I go. Whether I'm sitting with you guys, I'm sitting with my wife, I'm praying and meditating, whatever it is, it's the same guy who's having the same spiritual experience as he moves through the world. And there's this quote I love that we're not human beings having a spiritual experience, we're spiritual beings having a human experience. And that's, I don't know who said it, some jackass. But I think that that's how I view it, that we are spiritual beings in the physical world having a human experience. And I think that's, it's fucking awesome. It's great. But we've so lost track of that. And now it's about political parties and volunteer groups and the hobbies that you do and your work that you hate and the relationship that you want to get out of and your family is this and, you know, all of these different boxes. But we have to, like, I believe, you know, part of the big mission of ourselves as human beings in this day and age is to have it all flow together and see it all as the same thing. Nature. I talk about how in my opening essay, I talk about how, like, you know, when you walk through a museum and you walk through all the boring shit on your way to get to the, like, exciting mm-hmm. paintings that you really want to see, and there'll be like some jug from like some Eskimo tribe sitting there and a little plaque about the jug.
Yeah.
But like, if you ever stop and look at those like Eskimo jugs, they'll be like, okay, here's a jug, and on the side is painted a mountain, and this is the mountain where the tribe lived underneath, and they believed its ancestors were from there, and it used this jug to transport water from the river that's drawn on there, you know, that flowed down from the mountain, and it was used in ceremonial rites, and the artist put his imprint here, and there's his signature, and you can tell it's a certain artist, and you realize, like, there's no compartmentalization there. Like, this work of art is everything. It's everything. It's an expression of that artist. It's an expression of that person's spirituality. It's expression of their creativity. It expresses their tribe and who they are, their ancestors, their connection to nature. It all flows through this one little jug that you walk by when you're walking through a museum. And to me, that's what... Spirituality is such a bummer of a word. I wish there was a better word. It's like soulfulness, soul connectedness, where all of these things are like...
Spirit boner.
They're spirit butter.
Spirit boner.
Spirit boners.
Spirit boners.
Well, but you use spirit butter to
lube your spirit boner.
But I think... But you know what? It's interesting. I will say...
That's
it's okay. See, this is the point, is that you can have a spirit boner for what I just talked about. Like, it doesn't... I'm so hard right now.
Oh my God, I can feel that.
Did you feel the table move?
Yeah, I did.
So, but this is it. Like, what you guys are doing, you're creating comedy, you're commenting on culture, you are not showering, obviously. Like, whatever it is that you guys do, like, it's so cool, and it's a part of being alive and being human, and that's what we have to embrace. Well, so it's not anything that keeps you away from being soul deadened.
I'll tell you, you know, just two things. Number one, I have a weird kind of OCD thing that I do when I go through museums. So if I were to stop and look at that jug, I force myself a lot of times
to read everything about the jug.
I read, not only do I read everything about the jug word for word, and I make sure that I fully understand it. It's like a job, I feel like, when I go to museums, because I feel like I have to do that. But the other thing I do is I look at that thing and I think, well, this jug has survived, or let's just your jug example. This mm-hmm. jug has survived for, you know, 3,000 years. And I just imagine, and I literally feel the smallness of my life compared to it, because I feel like all these things that have happened, like anything in history that we've ever heard of, and, you know, for probably 2,000 years, that jug was just sitting in the ground just as it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it has existed the entire time on this earth, and all of these things have happened, and it still survived, and here it is. Like, I have these weird kind of, like, existential artifact moments.
When they found that Iceman,
Like, oh yeah,
I was like, whoa, like Caesar, Rome had fallen, and he was
just in there, just
frozen away,
chilling.
You don't think 3,000 years from now people are going to be listening to the Nerdist podcast?
Well, yes, I think it will be their new
outlook. Aliens, when we've destroyed ourselves as a culture, as a species,
then they're going to find our
I think they should replace that. They should replace that gold record with Nixon's voice on it, or whatever, or whoever's on there put the podcast on. But the other thing is that, you know, I think part of the reason why people are so scattered and fucked up now and compartmentalized, like you say, is because I don't think our brains are, or maybe we can evolve into it, but our brains aren't equipped to deal with the amount of stimuli that's in the world that we have now. And so because we're
only using 10%, Chris. 10%.
It's three.
That 10% is getting overloaded.
There's 90% here.
But I feel like people, you know, it's. Because all information is mm-hmm. available at all times, mm-hmm. And we have to manage that with our brains somehow, I think that's why people compartmentalize and they stick on to like a thing, because they're like, I just need a thing, because there's too much in the
totem.
World.
They need a totem.
They need a totem?
A totem.
They need a totem.
Uh-huh.
They do need a totem. Yeah. So I think that has a lot to do with it. And so when they were making the jug, like everything was a lot simpler because it was just...
A mountain and the stream and
the stream
and
we
have a rug and
we have to eat and occasionally shit and then we have to fucking make more people.
That's true.
I
would love to know when boredom became something. Like, when did someone have nothing to do? Like, what time of, like, in our society?
I think boredom is as old as time itself.
You think
I don't think so. I think boredom,
they always had something to do.
Boredom goes hand in hand with decadence.
Interesting.
So the first boredom was the first decadence in ancient Greece, and then the second boredom was in ancient Rome. I'm sure there's some Sumerians or Babylonians that were bored. I bet there's some Egyptian princes that were sitting around.
Yeah, they just got on top of their...
How many virgins can I deflower today?
Just the idea that someone way back in the day, it's like, you know, like how many, like a caveman killed all you need to kill, like harvested all you need to harvest, you know, impregnated his wife, and just like, I'm bored.
Yeah,
you know, they always had something to do.
Well, I think boredom probably came with consciousness, like, because you can't really be bored. I don't know if you can really be bored unless you're conscious. Then, like, once you're conscious, then you can kind of be like, oh, because you're not conscious, you're just driven by your immediate needs. You're not dying, shitting, you know, like whatever. And so then when you become conscious, then you can willfully not do things that nature tells you you need to do. And so
I think it's anytime it is. I do believe that boredom comes along with decadence, that you get to a certain point where a culture creates too much plenty, where you have grain is stored up in the warehouse and you have servants working for you and you're of a certain class. And
Stevenson, will you bring me my grain, please?
and then that's when boredom sets in. But we're at a crossroads right now, I think, humanity as a species of what are we about? Because what is the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? Like, our country is literally based on those things, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Like, people want to be happy. But what is that? What is it to be happy? Is it having stuff? Is it accruing things? Is it, you know, being left alone? Is it having hobbies? You know, collecting insects?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have those in the other room.
But you know what I mean? Like, so we're at an interesting crossroads. Like, it's not working. People are miserable. They're more miserable than ever. But they think that
people
they have
more
everything.
Aware of how miserable they are than ever.
Not only that, because but people
are
told, also
you shouldn't be miserable.
And also people are able to. I mean, you know, think of. You know, it's funny, like if I'm watching Mad Men or I started watching Boardwalk Empire and I watch these period pieces and people just misbehave in horrible ways and I'm like, yes, there's no surveillance. Like, their lives aren't on display for everyone at all times.
TMZ.
Like TMZ.
That doesn't seem like it's stopping anybody, because there's still people, because there's a camera around, acting out and being crazy.
Jersey Shore.
Jersey Shore, most of, you know, all the YouTube kids. You know, they're doing things horrible on purpose.
Like that fucking jerk who was going on local news shows pretending to be a yo-yo master.
Sometimes
what?
It was,
but I honestly think that I think that you know, people keep feeling like happiness is this touchdown that they have to all of a sudden feel and spike the ball, and then sometimes you really kind of have to, because I get caught up working all the time and pursuing whatever it is that I'm pursuing. And you know, like, you know, my girlfriend tells me a lot. She's like, sometimes you really just need to stop and just appreciate, You like
me and yeah, my vagina. It's not
Rain, now that you mention it.
That happens a lot, you know, and especially in our stuff, we're always waiting for the next thing to happen or waiting to do something. It's like, oh, I got a party on Friday, I got some work to do on Saturday. You're always waiting for that next thing to happen. And then, you know, a year will go by, and you're like, wait, what happened? I was just constantly waiting for something to happen, which brings it down to that.
Because happiness is always around the corner. One rarely feels it. And when you think back to, like, when were you truly happy? And when you think back, like, what are the five happiest moments of your life? You realize that it wasn't happiness that you were feeling. It was, like, profound connectedness. My happiest moments are, like, fishing with my son when my son was born. You know, like a romantic weekend I had with my wife or something like that. But it wasn't like happy. Like, what is that happy? Hee, wee, woohoo. Roller coasters are happy. Do you know what I mean?
I think that real happiness is content.
I like the connection idea, because I think sometimes, like, when I think of, oh, something will happen and then I'll be happy, I tend to, I guess, condense happiness into a moment. Like, oh, it's just going to be this moment of pure joy. Yeah,
and then from there on out, it's going to just stick with me.
Exactly. Well, as opposed to an experience where, you know, you sort of feel...
the ancient Greeks had a word for it called eudaimonia. And that, I think this
eudaimon.
Eudaimonia. You just sneezed a lemon.
No.
Whoa! You made some sneezing snacks.
It's a white dove.
Okay. But eudaimonia, if I'm saying it right, is what you talked about, like contentment. But it's more than that. It's like, it's a deep, rich, inner soul-filled happiness. It's a kind of a profound happiness. I was going to try and look it up on my little iPhone, but I don't have an internet signal here.
Oh, I do.
Nor will you.
Yeah, no. I can,
Little iPhone.
So how do you find that? I mean, like, you... And, well, here's the other thing is, too, I think people...
But this is what... this is part of what I think that Soul Pancake is about, and what, you know, kind of my life is about, is how do you connect these dots to bring people to eudaimonia, to realize that, you know, having material things and like the life of the guys. The Jersey Shore is a perfect example. Like, the Jersey Shore is really the reason that show is so popular, is, like, they're living the kind of decadent dream of every young American. You know, they're just, like, fucking in hot tubs and drinking gallons of light beer.
And they're just famous.
Yeah,
and they're just famous.
And without famous, without for doing nothing.
Without merit.
A friend of mine was just in Las Vegas, and they went to they got dragged to a club, and it was packed, and someone was like, the situation's here. And they went to the club, and he said everyone was a Guido. And he goes, and I thought that was a thing that people were ashamed of. And I said, yeah, but it's sort of like rednecks or nerds or like any kind of stereotypical group. Like when you cluster them together and they can like they want to celebrate that they're really that thing, you know, because it makes it okay.
Like a Star Trek convention.
Like a Star Trek convention or this Guido club or, I don't know. I found eudaimonia here. Eudaimonia is a... And by the way, Greek is a... You know, I had to take Greek and I went to Catholic high school, so I had to take Latin, and they made us take Greek a little bit.
Good.
And
good.
Greek is an interesting... Ancient Greek is interesting because they'll have a ton of words for the same thing, but there's slight variations on the specificity.
Like the Eskimos?
I guess
or
so.
Snow.
Do they have a word for Schadenfreude?
They probably do. Eudaimonia is a Greek word commonly translated as happiness, commonly. Etymologically, it consists of the word eu, good or well-being, daimon, spirit, minor deity. While the popular usage term happiness refers to a state of mind related to joy or pleasure, eudaimonia rarely has such connotations, and the less subjective human flourishing is often preferred as a translation.
Human flourishing.
Human flourishing. Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
And that was this week's Chris Reed Wikipedia.
That's right. Welcome to Hard Wikipedia.
I wish one of my tweets from last week I was most proud of, which is I said I tweeted, I printed out all of Wikipedia. I wonder what that would take. How many million pages?
I'm sure there's some kind
millions.
Of infographic that somebody's made. If you printed out the internet, it would be
this many.
You could stretch it all the way to Pluto and all the way back.
So, but human flourishing, does that mean just constantly growing as a person? As like never really going reverting back to anything you were before, but just continuing to grow? And
you know what, I think that that's interesting that you say that, because I feel like people, I think people get depressed when I feel like depression is, I mean, unless you're talking chemical depression, but just in general, like sadness, you know, I feel like you get depressed when there's excitement with no outlet. So like if you get excited for something, but then you don't have a way to express it, then I feel like it just kind of flips over on its back and then you get depressed because you don't have a way to express that energy. But I think people need to keep growing in some ways, and maybe that's why we're always pursuing stuff so hard, because we can't ever be still.
But what we need to pursue is human flourishing, and sometimes human flourishing comes from like not doing anything. Like you can take a day of, you know, meditation or sitting under a tree and just eating a hot dog, and then you can be in that human flourishing.
Is that what you do? You say you meditate. When you're meditating, what do you is there a specific place you're trying to find, or is it just you're shutting everything off?
Well, me personally, I meditate every day. I do, but the most basic kind of meditation that I can do, that most anyone can do, is you take a couple of minutes to just get in your breath and get in your body and just relax your body. And then you literally just take 5 or 10 minutes, just put it on your iPhone on the timer, and you just try and stop your thoughts. You just literally try and not think anything.
It's fucking hard.
And then thoughts will come in. And you just let them go. You just let them go like little thought bubbles. Let the bubbles just float away. And just know, don't judge it. Don't kick yourself about it. It's going to happen. It's natural. It's almost an impossible thing. Mm-hmm. But then you'll find like there's this magical sweet spot where all of a sudden there'll be like a minute or two where you're just being without thinking. And it is so... to talk about human flourishing, it gives me all of this energy. It gives me energy to get through the day and to do so much more than I could ever possibly do without the meditation.
What do you think is happening? I mean, is there a scientific reason for that?
I'm sure there's brain scans and stuff like that, and every different meditation group has different like theories about it. For me, from my own personal beliefs, I mean, personally, spiritually, I'm a member of the Baha'i Faith, which is another weird sounding religion by some weird fucking celebrity.
No, not at all. You know, we talked about this years ago, and you told me, and the way you explained it was really nice. Mm-hmm. You were like, listen, we just are. Like, we accept people, and everyone's nice, and we love people and things, and that's pretty much it.
The Baha'i viewpoint is that, is unity, and that unity in all things, that there is only one religion, that everyone on the planet is actually worshiping the same God. There's only one God. And that all of humanity is one human race. Mm-hmm. In finding that commonality through, you know, love and service, that we can flourish as a species, because we have to learn, we have to turn a spiritual corner here, or we're going to destroy ourselves. Mm-hmm. So that's what it is in a nutshell. I mean, it's. That'd be a long podcast talking about that.
I think it's good. You know, like I mean, I think it's good to talk about substance in between the
fart jokes,
chimp raping frog jokes, but
or the tumor fucking
is another example of that.
Yeah, there was a time in my life where I was feeling really depressed. It was before I started doing comedy, and I was living out here. I moved out here with the intention of doing comedy, and I just didn't. I just lived in San Pedro, hung out with bands, and went on the road. And just drank all the time, and I was working at a record store in Venice Beach and a Borders coffee shop in Torrance, and I just did nothing, and I was getting depressed all the time, and I'd never been depressed before. I grew up playing in bands in Hawaii, and I moved out here and I was just doing nothing, not moving forward, didn't have any kind of outlet, like mm-hmm. you were talking about, like that one thing to release that excitement you have about anything in life. And a weird thing that happened where I was during my lunch break, I would go to my favorite burrito place in San Pedro. And I'd get halfway through my burrito, and then I would start to get disappointed because the burrito was almost done. And this is my favorite burrito, and I was almost done with it. And then I would be like, oh, I'm halfway done after this burrito is done. I go back to work, and I start feeling shitty again, and I don't like my life. And I kind of had to make this thought process of but that's not here yet. That's not the burrito is still here. You still have it. Like, I wouldn't be able to enjoy
it. You're trying to enjoy the present.
And like, so I would call it in my head, believe in the burrito. And it was just like,
fantastic.
It was just my idea of just, because like, don't let what, you know, what else, what might not happen or what might happen not bug you. while you're just living in this one spot right now. Just enjoy the rest of the burrito and then wait and see.
Yeah.
You know, but don't let it ruin your fucking swordfish burrito.
That is a perfect analogy for life right there, is just enjoying the burrito one bite at a time, as opposed to like, I'm going to get... Most of us get the burrito, are excited to eat it. All of a sudden, the burrito's gone. We don't remember eating it. We're full and we're unsatisfied. And then we go back to the job that we hate. And so we just aren't living in our bones, you know?
Yeah.
And, have you ever listened to Eckhart Tolle or read Eckhart Tolle?
I listened to. I was going through this period of time where I was just downloading any audiobook that I thought was some kind of, even if it looked like the worst sort of crappy like self help book. I was like, you know what? I'm going to listen to stuff in my car because you're in your car in Los Angeles a lot, and I figured even if it's shit, then it's better than just listening to the same music I listen to all the time, mm-hmm. and I can at least go, all right, that was shit, and I know that was shit, and that's not the way you're supposed to do it. And I believe I did listen to one of his books, and
The Power of Now.
The Power of Now,
really good.
And
or did it drive you crazy?
No, it didn't drive me crazy. And I think I listened to a book by the guy that published that book. Was another guy there was a guy like the publishers. I feel like the guy that was connected with him in some way that he wrote a book about.
We're all connected in some way, Chris.
Yeah, exactly. Whether you publish books of other people or whatnot, mm-hmm.
read them.
But no, and you know, because yeah, I feel like everyone's just kind of looking for anything. I kind of like the burrito.
I think the burrito analogy is perfect. But that's where our culture is at. Our culture is halfway through this monstrous burrito, and just kind of going like, oh, our burrito's almost done.
Yeah.
You know, and that's exactly what
we
are.
It's the search. It's like you're watching a YouTube clip, and you're enjoying it, and you're laughing, but then you realize, oh, it's all...
Yeah.
You can see where it's about to end.
So then you need that next YouTube clip.
Yeah,
and
then you click on the next one. And then you've had five burritos, and...
Yeah.
someone told me once, which I thought was really interesting, that... Because, you know, I'm a worrier. I worry a lot. Just because
I'm worried about how much you worry.
Are you really?
Don't worry. Oh, that'll make him worry.
Oh, my God. Now I'm worried that you guys are worried about my worrying, but it's fine.
No, Chris, I'm not worried.
No, but someone told me once that worry was a misuse of your imagination. And that's a really interesting way
that's
to put
cool.
that. Because
great.
When you start getting into those kind of like worry circles, they just get worse.
I had a big breakthrough. I go to therapy and... My therapist was like, so how are you feeling? I said, I feel anxious. And the therapist was like, yeah, but how are you feeling? I'm like, well, what do you mean? I just said I'm feeling anxious. Anxiety is not an emotion. It's like, and it was like, huh? It was like, gong. It went off in my head. I never thought of that before.
Right.
I identify myself with how much anxiety I am constantly feeling. I'm always under kind of some kind of weird anxiety, and this is why part of me I have to meditate, because otherwise my anxiety just takes over like a weird shitstorm in my head.
Yeah.
But I thought that was really cool, because I think also I'm going to speak on the broadest terms, like we as a culture too. I keep going there. Like we're anxious. But underneath, what is that anxiety? You know, it's we're consuming, we're joking, we're talking fast, we're texting, we're tweeting, our wheels are spinning 100 miles an hour. We got little duck legs under the surface of the lake paddling away. But what underneath that is fear. We're just afraid. That's what's going on right now.
I think we're afraid. Of course,
but we're not in touch with like what's that?
But do you think we're just afraid of the end of whatever we're being stimulated by?
Yeah, I'm not even sure what it is. The end of something. Yeah,
because I spend a lot like at work writing and I'm in front of a computer. So yeah, I'm on.
Where do you work, dude?
Right now I work at E.
Jonah used to write. Jonah wrote for my. Yeah, he writes for Steve Kometko.
Yes. Okay. No, right now I'm writing on like an E special, the 50 Celebrity Oops. But it's like
better than 50 Celebrity Poops.
I don't know if it would be. That'd be really awesome.
Elvis got to be number one.
Yeah, but I wrote on his show too.
Burt Reynolds was shaped like Dom DeLuise. Anyway,
spend a lot of time online, and sometimes when something happens in our culture, it's just a waiting game to see how fast that will become a meme online. We were talking about this earlier with Sad Don Draper,
yeah,
the crying Don Draper from that episode of Mad Men, where it's like the episode came out, and then the next day there was a website dedicated to putting his face in front of, you know, the Hindenburg disaster or a concentration camp. You know, just and so now when things happen, everyone's like, how's that going to be mashed up or auto-tuned or, you know, a GIF turned into a GIF with sunglasses coming down on their face?
Yeah.
You know, what
about
be
the Dobson, what's his name? Dodson? Run, tell that
Andre, what is it, Andre?
Andre Dodson?
Run, tell that the
run, tell that
rape song.
Oh,
the Huntsville rape song mashup. Exactly. That's the perfect analogy. Yeah, of that too.
It's just like that thing happened, and then they auto-tuned.
Hey, he got a house out of it. Good for him.
He did.
I really liked the song is catchy. The guy was hysterical. It was very clever to imagine.
There was a kid that Nicole posted it on the Nerdist site where it's the guy that took the Quran from the guy burning it.
And like, dude, you have no Quran.
Yeah, the auto-tune of that is one of my favorite things.
It's really good.
But you know, I'm a sucker.
You know, I honestly think. I mean, you know, part of me wants to blame the news. The other part of me wants to blame the people.
Auto-tune the news.
Part of the part I want to blame the people who consume it, but I feel like, you know, people forget. I feel like the news sort of paints this picture of the world that everything is cataclysmic and is shit.
Yes.
And the reason they have to do that is, and people watch the news like it is fact, like it is 100% fact. And you know, while it is. It is a fact-based program. It's a program. And I don't think people know, like, well, the news...
They use fear to drive eyeballs to the TV sets.
They're fatalistic. Yeah, exactly. Because their shows and their
publications... And that's why no one watches CNN. They don't do much fear-mongering on CNN. They just kind of go, like, and next we're going to talk to the author of this person, and we're going to report on what happens in this country.
So, you know, like, you hear people say, like, oh, my God, the world is... Oh my God, we're going to hell.
What about the local news? Like, the weather's looking great, and we had an opening at the movie theater, and blah, blah, blah. And next, could your couch be killing you?
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God, I better watch that.
Yeah. It's just, I want one of the times I'm watching the news is like, our local news programs creating fear? Up next, after this break.
The results may surprise or kill you.
Is that a real one?
That's just something someone should make.
That's very funny. That would be a very funny sketch.
I remember that they... years ago, there was this thing when the 105 freeway was still being built. There was a car chase, and the cops and it was, you know, like on every local news station, of course, because LA loves to. I think fucking car chases have a development deal, but they chased this guy out to the 105 freeway, which was not completed yet, and so he kind of stopped where he couldn't drive any further, and he got out of his car and shot himself. And it happened live on the news.
Oh wow!
And so it was funny to me because the next day,
and Matt embalmed his body.
Matt embalmed his body. But they were upbeat about it. But so there was this kind of smug sort of the next day, like, well, you know, we're very sorry. That certainly was not responsible journalism. And obviously we know kids had just come home from school.
Yeah,
and
my friend George watched.
We're sorry that they saw that. But remember, kids shouldn't have seen that here first on Action News. Like, they still kind of had this sort of smug, you know, we're the first station to atone for our atrocities. And they're like, come on, don't fucking try to take credit for apologizing for the thing you shouldn't have shown.
Dude, in Hawaii, when Tyke the Elephant got shot, they showed it over and over and over again. Like, they just like,
they talk about that with the 9/11. Like, they figured out, like, that all of these kids went through this intense trauma. And they're like, what was the trauma? Watching the towers fall down over and over and over again.
Right.
And this whole generation of kids in the United States, like, went through a month where that was all that was on the TV. Was just people dying, people dying, people dying, people dying.
Can I tell you actually a weird story about that? I was on a plane September 11th at JFK Airport. And we were supposed to take off. I was on an American Airlines flight. I was supposed to come back to LA because I was working in New York. And the pilot came out. Like, we weren't taking off. And it was like, what's going on? The pilot came out, and he's almost crying. And he was like, two planes have flown into the Twin Towers. And no one really had a concept of what that was yet. I think people were kind of like, wait, crop dusters? There's no crops. But like, it's tiny, what? And then you turn around, and you could see the plumes of smoke coming off the towers. And so there was just complete pandemonium. And like, they're getting people out of the airport. And you're hearing all this information as people are running past. Where they're like, they just attacked the Pentagon. And then they just attacked it. And so it really feels like... To be at that airport at that time when they're evacuating the airport, like, people are just getting on shuttles. All the hotels are full. There's no place to go. Of just kind of having this moment of, like,
all the rental cars are gone.
This is it. Yeah. Like, this is it. This is it. And then that night, someone from the production that I was working on found me at some hotel in Queens where I couldn't even get a room. I was just kind of sitting in the diner there, like, heavily drinking. And because I was so freaked out. And we went back to this apartment of a guy who was one of the production guys on the show I was working on, and every channel was just that, the towers falling over. One channel, and I can't remember what it was. I want to say maybe it was TBS, was showing Grease 2. And it was the best fucking movie I had ever seen. Wow. Because it was just a moment's respite from just all the horribleness. I watched Grease 2 and I was like crying and singing the songs. Oh. Like, it was such a weird, intense experience.
They win the counter programming award.
That's insane. Someone at TBS or whatever. I don't know if it was TBS. I can't say.
Thank you.
But someone at that, station was like, nah, let it play.
No, I like to think it's like they saw it happen. They're like, well, what are we going to do? I have just the idea. And then they both pull out keys and they put them in the thing and they turn them at the same time. They bring out their copy of Grease 2.
Our scientists at the Pentagon have determined that Grease 2 is just the right amount of pap and non-comedy to pull people out of a deep depression.
When I went on 9/11,
reproduction.
It's got Michelle Pfeiffer in it.
On 9/11, I was working at the record store in Venice Beach. And it was a Tuesday, so it was new release day. So there was these people just coming in because what they knew what to do with that day.
Yeah.
They just would wander in this fog, and it was so weird. It was just kind of like, and like that whole thing with Dawn of the Dead. It's like, why are they coming to the mall? It's just that's what they did.
Right.
So there's just these people, like zombies, coming in and then just looking at the new release wall. And then a lot of guys came in because, it's Venice, a lot of Suicidal Tennessee kind of metal guys are still there. And then I was like, I'll take a Slayer album, God Hates Us All.
Oh,
pretty
no.
Pretty messed up what happened today, huh? Thanks, I'll take this. Thank you. See you later.
Oh, my gosh.
That was the last...
Slayer's God Hates Us All came out.
That was the last English class I went to, because I was in college, and it happened during my English class, and we were like, oh, you guys can go. And I never went back to that English
class. You took an 8 a.m. class?
It was, I think it was 8 o'clock, on Monday, or Tuesday. It was 8 o'clock Tuesday.
Wow.
And we were in class, and then everybody got to go on break, and we went on a break.
I had to shoot a beer commercial.
Oh, no.
It was either the next day or 2 days
after. Making it right!
A Rolling Rock commercial. And it was so weird, because we had to be jovial and pretending to be drinking beer and eating pizza and joking around. And
I remember going to Zoolander. What was it, the weekend or 2 weekends after that, and being the only one. It was a full theater, and I was cracking up, laughing, and no one else was really laughing.
Oh, like, really?
This is funny. Why are you not?
Well, it's not that funny.
I think maybe you're more scarred than you realize.
I stand by Zoolander.
I like the idea of being in a beer commercial with the two guys like, hey, let's go in there and have a party at that house we don't own. What's the worst that could happen?
All right.
Towers could fall.
I know, everyone's crying. Everyone's crying.
We're all dead.
3, 2, 1.
It's like that Mr. Show sketch where they're at that party to celebrate the Challenger launch.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, no.
You know, when you think about it, aren't we really just rolling rocks through life? Isn't that really what we are? Isn't that what we fucking are, you guys? That's really... But you did the commercial?
I did the commercial and paid my rent for half a year.
Nice. So, now that we've come out of all that, are you... Because you're obviously... You're at a point...
Let's talk about AIDS.
How's the office?
I want to know just and then we'll wrap it up in a few minutes, but now I'm always curious, like, where people are kind of satisfied, because you set these goals in your mind, like, I want to do this with my career, and I want to have this with my family, and I want to, and it seems like you've hit probably a lot of those things that you always wanted to hit. You're on a successful show, people love your work, and your wife, by the way, Holiday, is a fucking genius. Like,
thank you for saying that.
She's such a super cool, super smart woman that I imagine that your son Walter is just probably like a pulsating brain.
Yeah, he is. He's like a brain with legs.
So you oh my God, no, Jonah, that's not literal. You're taking it literally. He's still a person.
I was going to say, I'm so sorry.
but you know, like, does it feel like what you thought it would feel like? Are you still like, I'm not really there yet? Because a lot of people get what they want and then they feel like they're not there.
Dude, it's been so crazy because I wasn't, you know, I did theater for 10 years before I ever came to LA. I never got over 20 grand in a year. There we are talking about money.
I'm very comfortable.
And then I came out here and I did House of a Thousand Corpses and like Charmed and some episodes, some crappy episodes and crappy pilots and stuff like
Galaxy
that.
Galaxy Quest,
classic.
It's a good movie.
It's beyond my wildest dreams. I just wanted to be a working actor. That's all. I had no ambition towards like celebrity or stardom or anything like that. I just wanted to make a living. So it's all gravy, you know. It's amazing, you know, of what I get to do. So, you know, what's in store for me now? I don't know. I'll do a couple more years in the office, and then, you know, maybe I'll go back and do some plays, and hopefully get cast in some movies, and then eventually do some other TV show or something. I'm really lucky. I'm really lucky that I get to make a living as an actor.
Is it even more scary when you kind of get to a certain point where you can you go from, well, I better just take any job that comes along because I want to work.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to people just offering you things, and then is there kind of an insecurity of like, what if I take the wrong thing? Or what if, you know, like, there are just so many factors that make a project good.
Yeah.
So,
I've kind of lived that. I mean, I was in one of the biggest box office bombs in Hollywood history, which was The Rocker. And I was, you know, I was just...
No, that couldn't have been real.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It had a wide release. It had like 2,000 some screens and like the lowest screen average of like any movie ever. Literally, like, it was on 2,000 screens and there were like eight people in every theater.
And then the animated movie came out that took that back. Don't worry about it. Remember that animated movie that had a wide release, the computer animated movie? And
yeah, that
$57.
I wonder what you're talking about.
That's the number one.
Dogwood or something.
But Rocker was up there with that, and it.
Were you meditating that next day? Like, do you take that on?
Brutal. Yeah, I took it on. It was hard. I was really depressed for months after that. I mean, it was hard. You know, this great story is like, I love Kevin and Bean, and you know,
yeah,
obviously. And
Los Angeles radio DJs, very nice.
I was driving in the day after, like the Monday after the weekend. The Rocker came in 12th for the weekend. Out of like, there were like three or four new releases, The Rocker was one of them, and it came in 12th, which means it was beaten by like just the worst dreck. And I was driving into the office, it was like 5 o'clock in the morning, it was pitch black outside. I was driving really depressed, and Kevin and Bean were on the radio, and they're like, so what's going on with the movies? Well, wait a minute, what happened to Rain's movie? Where's Rain's movie? Oh no! Oh, number 12! Oh no! It made 2.8 million over the weekend! Oh, that's gotta hurt! Oh man, it bombed! What a bomb! Oh man, well, poor guy. You know, it's like when Fraser did that Periscope movie.
Oh, yeah.
Down below.
And, there I was driving down the freeway, I was like,
oh my god, I'm gonna drive off this embankment.
Because
I really believed in the movie, and I still do. It's a very good movie, and now people are getting to see it because it's on constant run on HBO, and people are picking up DVDs and stuff like that. So, and it's cool, but it was pretty devastating for a while.
Wow. Oh man.
Yeah.
So what do you? I guess ultimately you just kind of resolve yourself to that's going to happen sometimes, and you move past it.
Yeah. You know, my the phone from the movie studio stopped calling. And that's fine. And then eventually someday they'll call again. But I've been doing these indie films, and
that's the thing.
A lot of like, other fun projects.
That's the thing, is that you're at the core of it. You're a good actor, so you can still act. It's not like someone who just got famous because they got put on a show by total happenstance.
Yeah, what was that? The MTV movie, Justin meets.
Kelly
loves.
Justin and
from Justin to Kelly.
From Justin to Kelly,
yeah.
Signed Justin. right?
They should still do that every year. Have the runner and runner up and winner of American Idol be in a movie.
Did you
maybe use the same plot? Maybe use the same plot that every year.
Really the did you see the cover of the Vanity Fair? I tweeted about it today.
No.
The cover of Vanity Fair is of this month is Lindsay Lohan.
Oh yeah, I.
So that's how you get famous is get famous young, do drugs, get arrested, and you'll be on the cover of Vanity Fair.
Well, and you know the thing that I always get so upset about is like to see Paris Hilton or Kim Kardashian or someone like that on a fucking on 17 magazine or whatever. It's like, is that really the role model you want to put out there for girls? Yeah. I mean, maybe they're very nice people. I don't know them at all, but I just sort of feel like where's the substance for some? Like, why does a little girl have to look up to that? I don't know. Yeah, it kind of bugs me a little
sex
bit.
Sex tapes were good career moves for
boys. Yeah, hey, you can always fuck your way to the top, right, guys?
Right.
Like, that's what that says to me.
When are we having a Nerdist sex tape?
What do you think I'm growing this mustache for?
Well, Rain, it has been
a thanks for having me.
Pleasure to have
really
you
quick,
on the Nerdist podcast.
For the indie rock nerds out there, I want to point out that he's wearing a Neutral Milk Hotel shirt.
Oh my god, I didn't realize you were wearing a Neutral Milk Hotel shirt.
I'm sure the nerds will go a little nutty for that one.
There you go.
I love it. I have so much. Oh, fuck, I probably shouldn't. Well, let's just say, in the time of Napster, I have a lot of Neutral Milk Hotel songs that. Where the title of the song is in all small letters and they're mashed together and there's underscores in it because it was
Oh,
right. The pirated.
No, I didn't pirate it. I'm saying I wanted it to.
I'm going to see Pavement on Thursday.
I'm going to that show too.
Right.
I drove up to Berkeley to go see them at the Greek up there.
Wow.
And it's.
By the way, did they get him to the Greek?
They did.
Okay, I just want
to
make sure.
Well, they never came to Hawaii, which is where I grew up, so I never got to see him. I moved out here after they broke up, so it's been really cool to be able to see them.
I saw him in '93 at the Black Cat in Washington D.C.
Oh wow. Nice.
Is that where you grew up?
Indie music cred.
Did you grow up in music?
No. I was doing a play at the theater. I'd just gotten out of college. I was like 24 years old.
President Lincoln's here to see the show.
Was it our American cousin?
Yes.
So your book comes out November 2nd, and it's a Soul Pancake
book. Soul Pancake, the book.
And can people pre-order that?
They can pre-order it anywhere they want. Just go to, Amazon or wherever they want. Yes.
And I get this old pancake, the Weekly Spoonful.
Okay.
And it's really cool. And,
oh, cool.
And we don't get to hang out that often, but I always have had such fond memories of our time together all those years ago. On the little film that could House of a Thousand Corpses.
That's right, Chris Hardwick.
Dr. Satan! Dr. Satan!
Dr. Satan, everyone.
Dr. Satan.
Enjoy your burrito.
Enjoy your burrito, America.
Enjoy your fucking burrito.
And your Eskimo pot. Good night.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.